everyone. Welcome to another episode of Problematic Fave. This week, we have Melania Trump's best friend, Jared Hill.
Wow. We're coming out the gate like that? That's what we're doing?
No, okay. Jared Hill is a wonderful journalist, writer, producer. He currently co-hosts Fanti with Travell Anderson, who you heard on a separate episode. And of course, I said Melania Trump because he is well known for breaking that story about the plagiarism thing. So I would like to welcome the wonderful Jared Hill. Thank you, Jared, for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Melania and I don't get along so well some days, and some days we don't get along at all. So
I mean, it's a journey either way. With friendships, right? With best friends, there's always ups and downs. And that is, that's kind of like the real depiction of a friendship. And I'm so glad that you guys are working through it.
Or something.
So Jared, you know, you chose a very popular show, a TV series for Problematic Fave. I remember when I asked you, and you immediately said, I want to do Will and Grace. And then I said, oh, I never really watched. And then you kind of were surprised that I never watched.
It's like, who are you? Like, what is happening right now?
Well, I never not watched, but I think I kind of would watch, like, maybe, I think I watched the first couple seasons or like peppered episodes throughout. Like, I wasn't an avid watcher. But before we go into it, for those of you who don't know what Will and Grace is or what, you know, and never watched the show. I mean, I don't know why you're listening to this if you haven't, but Will and Grace was created by Max Muchnick, David Cohan, and stars Eric McCormack, Deborah Messing, Megan Mullally, and Sean Hayes, and the iconic late great Shelley Morrison, who a lot of people tend, like, I really think that she was part of the core cast, but they always...
Oh, she absolutely was.
Yeah. But it's kind of like she was a little bit... We could get into that later. So Will and Grace, for y'all don't know, set in New York City, focuses on best friends Will Truman, played by Eric McCormack, a gay lawyer, and Grace Adler, played by Deborah Messing, a straight interior designer. Show was on NBC from September 21st, 1998 to May 18th, 2006 for 8 seasons, and then returned recently for a revival. I guess it was a continuation, right?
Genuine reboot. Yeah.
But they still recognize everything that happened in the past. Like, I guess it's like what they're doing with Sex and the City or whatever. And that ran from September 28th, 2017 to April 23rd, 2020. And that's a long run for a revival, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I think it's the longest revival run that there's been. They did 3 seasons.
Yeah, and that's like, because usually it's like a revival is like a one and done kind of thing. And then they're like, okay, we did our thing. But yeah, you know, people love the Will and Grace, and it shows. They won 18 primetime Emmys out of 83 nominations. Acting accolades for Eric McCormack, Deborah Messing, Sean Hayes, and Megan Mullally. And it also won Outstanding Comedy multiple times, or I don't know multiple times, but I know it won at least once. But no love for Shelley Morrison, which we could we could also get into that later. But first off, I want to kind of just start off by asking what made you choose this series? What is your connection to it?
Sure. So I... Oddly enough, before I even came out, my dad introduced me to this show, which in hindsight is very weird. He had been on like a plane. I think he was flying from like London to San Francisco or something, and like ended up watching the show and was like, oh, this show's so funny. And I kind of thought of it as a way of like, does he know that I'm gay? And like, that wasn't like at all what he was trying to do.
It's kind of like he was going, it's okay.
Right, which he absolutely was not. So it was just interesting. But I found this show and I had such a good time watching it because I'd not really seen, you know, gay characters in this way. And the creators of the show always described it as like the love story, a show of a love story that would never be, right? Like this gay man and the straight woman, they are best friends and they love each other, but they're never going to be together, no matter how much people want them to be. And so I loved the show. My best friend, whose name is also Jarrett, we've seen every episode. We reference it, you know, time and time again throughout every day. But it's gotten more and more difficult for me in the last couple of years as I'm like trying to rewatch it, and like it is just so overwhelmingly white. And they one of the reasons that it's been really intriguing to me, and I'm developing a book project where this will be something we'll talk about, but like the unique element of Will and Grace is that they got a chance to do it again in their 3 years of a reboot and still didn't do it well, right? Like they are all like huge liberals who are like super progressive and all of this, and they're their most powerful when they're all together, and like they put in Anthony Ramos in a couple of episodes of the first season and that was it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they've never really done well with race. They had Gregory Hines, who the late great Gregory Hines, in some of the early season, I believe in season two, and then Tay Diggs came in at the end of the run and was like, both of them were just like hot black people that we're dating kind of folks, and it was frustrating to see. So when you asked about this, that was why this show came to mind, because I've been battling with how hard it is to engage it again, because it doesn't feel like it used to feel.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes with a lot of the shows from this era, or kind of like that must-see TV, because and I want to, like the main one is Friends, obviously, right? It's like, like in college and in coming up, seeing that, I was just like, oh, I love this show. I cannot watch that show anymore. Like, it's difficult. And I feel like it's kind of the same with Will and Grace, but Will and Grace came after Friends. So they should have learned a little bit more. They're in New York City. But it's kind of like the repeat of things, right? It's like, what you call it, when, on Friends, they had Aisha Tyler, I guess, was the only black person.
Aisha Tyler for 8 episodes, I think, yes. And Gabrielle Union for 1.
Yes. And also, I know that in the beginning, Ross had an Asian girlfriend who I think, I forgot the actress's name, but I believe she was on Joy Luck Club. But still, it was just like, and I think there's just like this pattern repeating with this sitcom world. And it's very interesting. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I think we could still enjoy it, but it does not age well, I guess you would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there a particular a moment or like scene or whatever that really hooked you in? Were you like in it from the jump?
I don't remember like my first episode that I ever saw. I just remember like kind of watching it. Like I don't remember not watching it after that. Like it's one of those shows where I've seen every episode of it multiple times. I can tell you what's going to happen backwards and forwards. I can probably give you most of the lines, you know what I mean? Like it's kind of a ubiquitous experience for
intense.
Me
tense.
Yeah, no, like I know the show very well, and when you ask me about like episodes and stuff like that, it was so hard to even choose, like, how am I supposed to figure out an episode? What do you mean? But the interesting thing about this is it's a show that I'm so connected to and love so much, but I have always said it has arguably the worst finale I've ever seen. It's a terrible, terrible finale.
The finale for the first 8 seasons, right? The end. Okay.
Yeah. And so like the first 18, I don't know if we want to get into this now.
Yeah,
because
like, I was actually going to, we're going to get into that, because after you said that, I was like, so I watched, it's weird. Like I watched a couple episodes and then I watched the episode we're going to kind of use as a foundation. And then I watched the finale, like of the original 8 seasons. And I was just like, it's kind of like it was one of those like ending on a whimper kind of thing. And I'm like, well, even though I'm not really fully invested in Will and Grace, you know, you could usually tell when you could feel it when a finale is a finale, like it feels like a finale. And that one we could talk about in a little bit, because I was just like, oh, that's it. And I was just like, okay. But I do remember when they were doing promos for Will and Grace, there was one promo that kind of caught my eye. Like, this is kind of like in the beginning, and that's what kind of reeled me in for like one episode or two, and then I stopped watching, where I think it was Will and Grace, and they were kind of at an outdoor patio or like restaurant or cafe, and their table was wobbly. And they couldn't handle it, and then or they were just like complaining or whatever, and they there was another table across the way with a person at it, but that person got up to go use the restroom or whatever, and they switched tables, and like they physically switched tables, but they didn't, like, they could have just like went to the other table and sat there, but they physically switched tables. And I thought that was very clever, and that was like, oh, that kind of tells you a lot about their relationship and how they connect. And I could see why, you know, from what I understand of Will and Grace, it's like, we all have that girlfriend, right? Or we all have that person in our life who knows you backwards and forwards. And what I like, I do remember a lot of the episode, or some of the episodes where Will and Grace would get into fights, and those fights were really good. I think I really appreciated those. And those are like really true friendship fights. But the episode you picked that we were going to kind of use as a jumping off point for like the whole bigger picture is season 4, episode 17. Titled Someone Old, Someplace New, directed by James Burrows, story by Jeff Greenstein, and teleplay by Joni Marchenko and Alex Hirschlag. I'm guessing everyone there is white.
Probably so, yes.
And in this episode, I'll just read the synopsis. Will and Grace decide they want to move to a bigger apartment, and while looking at places, they fall in love with a gorgeous apartment that is way out of their range. They decide that to afford it, they should sublet their current apartment and gouge the renters to get money to afford their new place. They're excited when they find out that their friends, Rob and Ellen, who they're fun, by the way, who are expecting their first child, are looking to move back into New York from New Jersey while making a film about Karen's life for her birthday. Jack finds her mother working as a cocktail waitress in a bar and decides to reunite them for her birthday. And I'm guessing by like, because at the end of this episode, it kind of leaves you hanging a little bit. So that story continues, I'm guessing, right? From this?
Yes. Yeah. Well, Karen's mom is like her, it's Karen having a mother was like just a fact. It was like, you have a mom? Like that was a thing. But I initially was choosing an episode with Sandra Bernhard, and because they're moving in that episode, and so they are looking at an apartment, right? But they're looking at this apartment because it's Sandra Bernhard's apartment, and so they've got like this whole back and forth about them moving and all of this, and so them moving out of the apartment is a thing that happens a few different times over the course of the show, where Grace will move out of the apartment and Jack will move in, or Grace will move back in, or they will go looking at other apartments. And there's so many different like elements of that. And so, like I said, it was really difficult to choose like one episode that I was really, really going to hone in on. But with the cast of Will and Grace, it's always been interesting to kind of watch the ways that they interact with one another as best friends under the guise of this idea that they are this couple that never will be, right? Because we've seen them together. We've seen them kind of broken up. We've seen them kind of get back together. We've even seen them try to have a baby or decide to maybe have a baby. And then later on in the reboot, the children thing happens. And so this is interesting to me because it's kind of, it's a lot of their humor and their wit, and like you get to see all of these different elements of the characters. Megan Mullally plays Karen, who is just like she's a perfect, like way too rich, way too privileged woman who has no sense of her privilege, right?
Yes.
Which is funny in some elements, and then in 2021 it's like, yes, whoa, totally right?
Not. Yeah.
But it's they're just hilarious. So
yeah. I liked that part because I actually kind of looked it up, but the Sandra Bernhard thing, that was a callback to another episode, right? I think from the previous season, because they were looking at Sandra Bernhard's, and then I just love Sandra Bernhard, period. Like I think she's playing herself, but her cussing them out in the apartment was so much fun, and how like kind of they staged that, and how each of her curse words was interrupted by a drill. I think that was fun.
So that episode is like, it's one of my favorites because, and like we reference it so much, myself and my best friend Jared, because there's like a reference to another show. Like, so the premise of that episode is they're looking at her apartment, they want to move in, and they end up like making an offer because they just want to be her friend, and then they take that
this
offer
is
back.
This is not this, the main episode we talked. This is the previous one, the callback.
Right, episode, I guess. Yeah. Right, and so there's a moment where she, they've told her like, oh, we don't want to buy the apartment. We were just wanting to be your friends, and she is pissed. And so she says to them, you think I want to be friends with you two Dharma and Greg looking motherfuckers? Yeah. And like they hit the blender and it's like, it's so funny. Like I love that episode. And I actually thought I gave you that episode initially. And like, but like, there's so many different episodes that I could go on. But like,
because she did it again in this episode where she was like all Kate and Leopold motherfuckers.
Yes, exactly. Right. And like, she cusses them out every single time. And like, it's just, it's hilarious. And so I just love the ways that they are navigating these situations and trying to find a new place and all that kind of stuff.
Everyone is aware of Will and Grace because it did have this kind of cultural impact. I think like taking notes throughout the episode, I was just like, I do feel that energy of Will and Grace in their relationship, because I think I felt it the most when they were looking at apartments, and then they found this one, and this little kid comes out and says, hi neighbors, and Grace is immediately turned off and says, let's get the hell out of here, because that is
exactly
that is something I would totally do, because I'm like the only kids I could barely tolerate are my two nephews, period. It's like and they're getting older and taller than
I was gonna say. And that is probably for a time, right? Yes. Like, all right, we've had enough here. I'm gonna go home.
Like, I don't want to be around you for more than 3 hours. And it's like, exactly. I'm just like, oh, whatever. And even my sister probably like I remember when my nephews were younger, my sister would call me and be all, "Your nephews are assholes." And I'll be like,
"Yes,
okay."
Kids are awful, but they're also awesome. But they're awful.
They are awful.
That's like a running thing with Will and Grace as well, is like not wanting to have kids, or kids are terrible, and then like they decide that they might want to have a kid together, right? And like I think that's in season 5 or 6 where Harry Connick Jr. comes in and becomes Grace's love interest, but like that happens right after they've decided they're going to have a baby together, and so then it complicates that, right? And so they're trying to figure out, what do we still have this baby, do we not? And so it's a fun gag throughout the series.
Yeah, but and it's also like this interesting conversation. I remember one time a while back, I talked with one of my straight girlfriends, and we just kind of were like talking, and she's one of my best friends. We grew up together, and the topic of like all I just was like casually asking, would you carry my child if I asked you? And then she said no. And I was a little bit offended, right? But I was like, and then we had this whole discussion about why she wouldn't. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. But I was like, oh, even though I don't want kids, I was like, oh, it's kind of a whole hypothetical thing. And then I had another friend who was like, she was like hella extra and like really was like, oh, you need to have a kid. And I was like, oh, no, I don't. And she's like, well, if you want one of my eggs, you better act fast because I'm getting old. And I was like, okay.
Oh my God.
Which was very nice.
That's so generous of her though.
It is. But at the same time, it's like, okay, stop pressuring me, you know?
Fair. Well, it's interesting that we're having this conversation because I am literally in that situation right now. My best friend, who would have been my Grace, you know, and we'll actually see how things work out. But like, we made this pact when we were 18 years old, like, oh, first 35 and single, we'll have a baby together. And like, when I was 34, she was like, so.
Wow.
And I was like, I signed that contract under duress. I wasn't even 18. How could you call me for, you know what I mean? And now like 2 years later, after we've had that initial conversation, we're having that conversation now. And it is kind of a Will and Grace thing, right? Of like, okay, well, how would that work? And what would that look like? And how would we arrange that? And so as I'm kind of looking at Will and Grace in this moment, we're talking about them having kids, it's kind of reflecting in my real life that I'm like, wow, am I gonna have a kid with my best friend? Now, mind you, she's dating a woman, but like, I see that reflected in Will and Grace because I've seen them go through that so many different times.
Yeah. And I think this whole kind of like the surrogacy thing and just having a child, period, for a non quote unquote traditional couple is so interesting. It's like I look at, and we've seen a lot of this kind of storylines.
It's all something I've been thinking a lot about, especially mm-hmm. in the last 2 weeks. I've been thinking about it, and it's one of the primary things in my mind right now. And when I'm watching Will and Grace, I'm thinking like, oh wow, they've been through this, and like, huh? And like in the reboot, they end up having kids, I think, or something mm-hmm. with their.
Did you watch the reboot? I mean, like real quick, did you watch it, or were you kind of as invested as you were with the original series?
So I don't know if you know this or recall it, but during the 2016 election, they did like a reunion episode that was based on the election.
Yeah, and it was I remember it was like hashtag vote something. I remember.
Something like that, yeah, yeah. Right. And so like that is what sparked the idea of the reboot of the show. Mm-hmm. And so I watched that and I was like, oh my God, it's so great. It's so funny, blah, blah, blah. And I was really excited about the reboot. And then the reboot came and I was like, yeah, okay, like it wasn't as funny, it wasn't, and it was frustrating because I felt like they still just felt like they lived in such a white New York, but like Karen's a Trump supporter and like that's a gag, right? Mm-hmm. She's a wealthy white woman who's friends with Donald and Melania, and like they're always kind of ripping her about that. So I watched it and it didn't really hit for me, and so I don't mm-hmm. even know if I even saw the full last season, which actually is kind of ridiculous. I probably need to make sure that I do have seen all those episodes, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that I do kind of remember people writing about that or like seeing trailers or whatever clips about Karen being a Trump supporter, which in hindsight, I felt like was a big mistake, but you know, whatever. Trump, 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 Trump.
What are you doing here? I thought you were out of town.
Oh, we had to come back early. Stan had to have something drained from his new anus. Oh, kids. I gotta tell you, we just had such a fun weekend at Mar-a-Lago with Donald and Melania. You know, it really is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. The azure blue of the sea, the verdant green of the golf course, the mahogany brown of the staff.
But I love Megan Mullally, and I just, her character of Karen is so, I don't want to say likably unlikable or unlikably yeah. likable, something like that.
Well, because yeah. in this specific episode, Jack is doing this documentary called The Mystery of Karen Walker, right? And like,
it's actually really funny.
It is, right? And so like Shelley Morrison, who you talked about, plays Rosario, and she is Karen's maid and or housekeeper and like really kind of best friend, like second best friend. Yeah. And so throughout the episode, Jack is like coming up to people with a camera and like ambushing them with questions about this, that, and the other, and going through her checkbook and looking through a monocle, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's really funny. And so, but like we're unpacking like all of these little things about Karen that ends up in finding her mother and finding mm-hmm. out that she's been giving her mother money for, you know, years, I think, or something like that. And so it's interesting to kind of start to learn a little bit more about Karen Walker and like, and then you meet her mom. Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, mind you, this is in the fourth season, right? But like,
like the first time we in the series where we actually kind of dive into Karen's background and life?
Well, sort of. Like we've always... Karen is this interesting character because her husband's name is Stan, and he's this man that we never see throughout the entire series, right? And they always make fat jokes about him being like this huge, larger than life character. But we've never seen him throughout all of the seasons. But like we've seen her stepkids, and we've seen the wait staff, and we've seen the house, but like she doesn't really have other people around her because she's just this kind of enigma. And like, and so this episode, we meet her mom. And when you meet her mom, you're like, oh, of course this is her mom. Yeah. Like, she's like, broke. She's a bartender. She's got a great little figure and she's really snappy with her comments. It's like, of course this is Karen's mom.
It's kind of like the other side of a coin, I guess you would say. It's like, cause like-
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I forgot who the actress who played the mom was, but I'm guessing we see her. I'm like, now I'm fixing. I'm probably gonna now binge the first season, like the first series, seasons 1-8. Yeah. After you told me to watch it, because I'm like, oh, okay, now I need to follow this journey. Because
her mom, I'm looking at that. I think her name is Suzanne Plachet. Oh yeah, okay. Suzanne Plachet. Yeah. And she's hysterical.
Yeah. And mind y'all, this episode came out in 2002, and it looks like 2002. Let me tell you that much. But going back to Jack's documentary that he's making, I think one of the funniest lines was when he enters Will and Grace's apartment, and he's all, "This is where sex no longer lives," or something like that.
He says, "Welcome to the apartment that sex forgot."
Yes.
There's
thank you, fact checker.
Yeah, there's a running joke with Jack that he's like, you know, a playboy of sorts, mm-hmm. and that Will, he's always making fun of Will, A, calling him fat, and B, like pretending that he has no like sex life or social life, which is actually kind of interesting, because on Will and Grace, like, we've heard, you know, Obama and Biden talk about Will and Grace being a cultural moment that really had an impact on the way that the country viewed, you know, queer people or mm-hmm. specifically gay men. But like, we rarely ever actually see Will in a relationship, right? Will
yeah. is
single throughout the entire series. He has a couple of, you know, love interests or something like stuff like that. But like, there was a whole big moment when Will kisses Jack, but it was a gag, right? It wasn't mm-hmm. even romantic. It was just so that they could have a kiss on TV. They were in the audience of the Today Show, and like, they wanted mm-hmm. to see two men kiss on television.
I don't know if you're aware, but on this week's episode of Along Came You, there was supposed to be a kiss, and there wasn't.
Well, you know, Jack, sometimes a kiss is just not a kiss. We have any anniversaries?
Right, whoa, back to Jack. We went to complain, and this closet case upstairs, cute in an offbeat way, got his number, totally gave us the brush off. And I just want to know how long I'm going to have to wait until I can see two gay men kiss on network television.
Not as long as you'd think.
And so it's interesting in that element, because there's always this conversation about sex on Will and Grace, about Will's sex life, but we hardly ever see him in like a serious relationship. And like I said, in the last season, we see him in a longish term relationship with Taye Diggs. But like, that element of it is like, oh, this was like the spoonful of sugar with the medicine, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay, we'll show you this gay character, but we won't like shove it down your throat. I just realized. but we'll give you this gay character, but like, we won't make you see him have sex, and we,
yeah, it's
those
like
all kinds of things.
It's like, it's kind of like all you need to know, he's gay, period. That's it. We've right. done our job. Yeah, it's,
exactly. It's kind
of,
exactly.
Because I do like you saying that, because of course, even me not watching the show as much, I knew that Deborah Messing or Grace had a relationship with, I forgot Harry Connick's Jr. name. He was like a major, like he Leo. Was, yeah, yeah, deal. Like he was a regular, and that was a long term. And it's like, and then also it's like, I didn't even know that Taye Diggs was, they were a thing, but Will, I don't want to say it was desexualized, but it was just this like, you're gay. There you go. That's yeah. They're like, oh, very congratulations. And it would have been refreshing to see Will have a whole season or two and see the arc of a gay relationship or a queer relationship.
So in fairness, as I'm saying that, I'm remembering he did have a relationship with Bobby Cannavale, and okay, like okay. They're together, but like even that was always very, I don't know, it was, there was never like a sex life for them. Mm. And in the ways that I remember it. And Bobby Cannavale, who is gorgeous and like really funny on the show, he plays a police officer, which is also interesting in 2021. but when the reboot of the show came back, it was interesting to me that Will and Grace were both single again. And that frustrated me, because I felt like, Jesus Christ, like, can we not like see these people like have
yeah.
a life outside of each other, you know? And like, that was a frustrating thing for me for a good bit. And I don't know, it was something that I wanted to see. Like, I want to see Will in a real relationship,
yeah.
and see him like outside of what they did with Bobby Cannavale, who was again great on the show, and I enjoyed his storyline, but like, it just, it didn't end up being enough for me.
Yeah. So like from the original eight seasons, so if I'm guessing it follows real time, because like the original eight season I think ended in like 2006, I want to say. That I just said. And then 11 years later, so does it, if I'm guessing it follows that real time.
Yeah, they come back, Trump is president, and like they're dealing with that. And because again, that reboot moment that they had, that, well, the inciting incident of the reboot, if you will, was a moment that they were talking about the election and current events and, you know, what was happening in the world and what they liked and didn't like about it. And so when the show actually came back as a series again, that was something that they were able to dive right into.
Okay, so let's talk about this finale that you don't
Jesus
like.
Oh, Jesus Christ. It is so bad. Okay, so what? Oh, go ahead.
I know, I was just going to say, so I watched it. Obviously, there's probably a lot of gaps missing, but even with a good finale, even if you're not 100% familiar with the show, I feel like you would be engaged, right? You would be like, oh, okay, I get, and I already know these characters based on what I know, but I was just like, because there was the whole thing about the kids in the dorm rooms, which was kind of cute, but I was just like, okay, whatever. And then the final scene of them taking shots, I guess, or whatever. I was just like, what's going on here? Like, I don't know, but this is your chance to air your grievances.
Oh my God, how much time do we have? So the thing that I hated about the reunion is actually become funny, or excuse me, the finale has become funny to me, because for years, and I can't even tell you how many, probably since it aired, I always complained to my friend that what I hated about the finale was that it went into the future and then came back to the present, and like, it wrapped up things in such a way that there was just no opening for any imagination on what was going to happen to these characters in the future. And I kept saying to my best friend, I was like, well, she was my roommate at the time. And I was saying, like, what I hate about this is, like, there's no opening for this show to ever come back. Like, we can never do a reboot. We can never do a reunion series. Because, like, they've just closed the door, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I guess what's hilarious about that is it's literally the first show that came back and did three seasons of a reboot, yeah. Right? So that didn't end up happening that way. And in the first episode, they come back and they're like, oh, that was a dream or something like that.
Really?
And they like look directly to, it's something like that. And like Jack like looks directly to camera and like they have a moment and it's, you know, it's funny-ish. But I hated this finale because like they pay off the characters in a way that I just didn't feel like did any of them justice. Will and Grace, obviously being this love story that would never be, their kids end up meeting in college, and the same way that, or similar ways, I think, to the ways that Will and Grace met, and then they end up starting to date. But like Will and Grace aren't friends anymore. They hate each other. They're in relationships that are, you know, it's just, it's very weird. And I was just really upset with that ending. And like, I think I've only really watched that finale like once, maybe twice, because it's just, I hated it. I hated it so much. Well, okay, I was so mad about it.
Yeah, I will admit that I was like, oh, because, okay, I'll be honest. Like, I was kind of preoccupied on the computer, but I would look up and like, I was 75% paying attention. I'll rewatch it again. But I got what was going on, but then I remember looking up and they were at this dorm, you know, the dorm scene where it's like
in the hallway.
This Will's son and Grace's daughter kind of interacting, which I actually thought was kind of cute. I was like, oh, that's, we automatically know that these are their children, right?
And then I
was like, oh, wait, what, why are we here? Like, that's when I was like, why are we needing this? And then before we know it, all four of them are at the bar taking shots, and then they zoom in on the shots, and then they zoom out, and then I guess it's supposed to be them
back in the future, present,
or the past or present, or I'm not, I was like, oh, okay, what are we doing here? So I was just like,
I hated it. Well, and what's so funny is like, I have like this odd thing where I really love finales of shows even if I haven't watched the show before.
Yes.
So like I remember as a teenager, like Seinfeld was not a show that I cared about, but I did watch the finale and I was like, huh, that was interesting. And I love finales. Like, I never watched Game of Thrones. Like, I've maybe watched like a few episodes here and there, but I was, you know, obviously Game of Thrones was kind of a big deal to people. Yeah. And so I ended up watching like the penultimate episode of the penultimate season and then watching through to the end from there. And I was like, this last season is shit. And I have not even watched the rest of this show. You know what I mean? And so like finales are something that kind of get me excited. I want to see how we're going to wrap this story up or what we're going to do. And I just thought Will and Grace did such a shit job of it. One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is how shows that are more progressive tend to age well, right?
Exactly.
And so like, the project that I'm working on is centering around Friends and Living Single and looking at Friends and like how white Friends was and how, you know, how, and like, they were just kind of unapologetically white. Right. And so, yeah. But like, it doesn't age as well. Right. When you don't have diversity in the writer's room or in the casting. And so when you see shows, when you talk about something like that, like Family Ties, like a show that was progressive, or I think about The Golden Girls, right. The Golden Girls is such a progressive show.
Or even Living Single, like you were saying. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I mean, as far as like all white casts, when shows are more progressive, they tend to age better. But like for black shows or shows that have diverse casts, because we don't even have a bunch of shows that we can point to that have a predominantly Asian cast or Latinx cast or something like that, or certainly not an indigenous cast. But like when we see casts of color, like I really believe that those shows tend to age better, because when you look back at them 20 years later, they're not making racist jokes about black folks or Asian folks or whatever. Yeah. Or you're not having instances where you're saying things that are like really, really problematic, or having like whole arcs of things that are so problematic that when you look back at them, like they're not going to put them on the streaming service, or they've got to edit out parts of, you know what I mean?
Or they have to take like, so like 30 Rock, like they had to take that episode out, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, even 30 Rock, we're way off on a tangent here, but like 30 Rock, I think about 30 Rock in The Office and the ways that like, I don't know that those shows would work right now, like especially when Trump was president, because I think 30 Rock might work, but The Office, I don't think would. 30 Rock was making fun of itself, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas on The Office, and the bit that I've seen, because I really don't enjoy it, they're making fun of Michael Scott. And so
he's like a horrible white man, period.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But I think that like Trump supporting viewers would be offended by the depiction of Michael Scott today. And I mean, sure, it's on streaming and people watch it, but I think if it were airing today, I think people would feel differently about it. And I think that Will and Grace, if we're trying to bring it back to where we I think that Will and Grace getting the opportunity to do three whole seasons again, right? And to me, missing the mark was really, really interesting.
Yeah, I never thought about that until now, about how progressive shows, especially progressive white-centered shows, continued. Like, we could joke about after-school specials and kind of like on a very special episode, but those very special episodes still ring true today, right? It's like,
absolutely.
They're doing something, they're saying something. That's when I was watching Family Ties. I was also watching it when I was sick. I was really getting into it because, you know, the two parents are hippies. And then I remember tweeting out, because Michael J. Fox's character, Alex P. Keaton, is a staunch Republican, loved Reagan, loved Nixon. And at that time, that was the thing. It's like Reaganomics, all of that. But the fact that these two hippies, super progressive, super liberal parents, had this kid who has differing opinions, but at the same time, you know, there's a heart there. It was very interesting to me. And I remember tweeting out, it was like, oh, I wonder if Alex B. Keaton would have voted for Trump. And one of my friends, her friend actually was in the writer's room for Family Ties. She like texted him and she like DM'd me and was just like, oh, he says that Alex B. Keaton would be a never Trumper. But he probably would have secretly voted for him. And I was like, yeah. Or it was something to that effect. But
I'm always, you know, wrapped up in politics and things like that. And as we talk about like progressive shows tending to age better, it really comes to the core of what it means to be progressive, right? And being able to look forward. And I always lay this out for people, but like, what it means to be conservative is to conserve, to protect, to hold on, to leave unchanged, to, you know, want to stay the same. Whereas progress is wanting to look forward, wanting to include, wanting to, you know, be open and inclusive. And so when we think about that, like, it's very clear the reasons that, you know, progressive shows like A Will and Grace or, you know, Family Ties or things like that, or Golden Girls or Living Single and those different shows, why they tend to age the way that they do, because these shows were looking ahead and trying to be inclusive of what was coming, as opposed to really wanting to be conservative and holding on to the old values that, you know, that raised the writers of that show or the characters or what have you.
Yeah. And like you mentioned Golden Girls. I think even before that, Bea Arthur and Maude talking about abortion was like a whole big deal, especially during that time. And it's like, I think that's why Norman Lear shows are freaking still ring true today. He's like 99 years old and still kind of fighting that fight.
Obviously, I co-host Fanti. We've done this whole arc of shows on, including Bill Cosby and Bill Cosby, R. Kelly, and Michael Jackson. But like, even if we're thinking about The Cosby Show or A Different World, like those shows were progressive in the ways that they showed Blackness in a way that we hadn't seen before. You just said like you hadn't seen an HBCU before that, and I hadn't either, right?
Yeah.
And I know for myself, I went to Clark Atlanta University, and my friends and I, we always talked about like, oh, I love going here in the early 2000s, but it would have been really dope to be here in the 90s, right? When these shows were on, because they were looking ahead to the future. And now we have a vice president who went to an HBCU, and like there's so much conversation around Howard and all of these other schools. And so it's an interesting thing to watch these shows now, looking back at them. And like, I don't know that Will and Grace would have felt like a problematic faith to me, you know, 5-10 years ago. But now looking at it, it's like, this hits real different. When we're looking at Will and Grace or A Different World or all of these different kinds of shows, like there's always the opportunity for these shows to introduce us to something that we've not seen. And like, there's always an appeal to these shows that, you know, there's something that we recognize in ourselves or something that's familiar about this character or whatever. But like, there's also the great opportunity to show us something that we haven't had the opportunity to see, whether that is a queer straight relationship in a queer man's life, or, you know, an HBCU, or, you know, a family that, you know, is dealing with being on different ends of the political spectrum, or four older women living together in a house, whatever it is, like, it gives us a glimpse into another world that we wouldn't necessarily get to see. And so then you hope that these kinds of shows are progressive and looking forward, so that when people are seeing these images of what they could be or what they don't have, you know, other imagery of, they can see it in a fullness that we don't necessarily always see it in a lot of these shows.
I don't think a lot of people, or white people in general, realize how big Fresh Off the Boat was for the Asian community. And after Margaret Cho's show, which was like in 1993, it took like 20 some odd years. It was like, we get this win. And even though I wasn't like watching it on a weekly basis, I was just like, oh, just to know that it's there kind of comforted me. It was really good.
Well, I think what's really important about what you're saying, and like, I do a lot of like media consulting around diversity, right? And like, every time we have these kinds of shows, it is a big moment for someone, right? And I always think about Scandal, as a huge fan of Scandal, and you know, everything about Olivia Pope was perfect to me, and like, she could do no wrong, even though she was sleeping with a married president. But you know, like, that was a little deal, whatever. But like, it's a big moment for people. And like, I remember seeing Fresh Off the Boat. I remember watching Crazy Rich Asians. And I like the few moments that we've had in the last few years where there was a lot of Asian American, or not even necessarily specific Asian American, but Asian
any representation, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And like, you recognize like, this is a moment for folks. And like, I love that about it, right? Folks are seeing themselves reflected in this show. And I think that when we're looking at the ways that shows have the opportunity to do that, but don't always take it, or don't have the range, to be quite honest, right? It's frustrating.
Like, at this point in my career, in my life, in Hollywood and whatever, I'm not trying to say that white narratives aren't important.
but we've had enough of them.
Yeah.
We've got plenty.
And I'm just like, it brings me so much joy to see Black, brown, queer, disabled, anything that isn't of the dominant culture on the screen. Like, I will celebrate the fuck out of that, because I'm just like, to see, like, I remember interviewing Tiana Paris for Chirac. I remember that. We were talking about representation, obviously. And I was talking about like, oh, you know, growing up, all I would watch is like Living Single and Martin. And then she immediately she didn't interrupt me. She was like, and I was like, I know I'm not Black, but then she kind of said, but it was the closest thing to your skin tone. It was the closest thing to what you looked like you. And that's why you were, you know, attracted to it. And that's what made you connect to it. And I was all, okay, Tiana Paris, thank you. It's okay to be critical of something you like. Otherwise, you wouldn't give a fuck about it. It's like, there's a whole colorism conversation in the Asian community too, because there's like East Asian versus Southeast Asian and South Asian. And I'll tell you this much, like all of us brown Asians or darker tone Asians, it's a thing with all cultures. And we constantly get erased or, you know, get replaced, or we just get, like all my Indian friends during that one scene in Crazy Rich Asians with those guards, they were not a fan of that scene. And they're like, oh, that's all we get.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that we don't really have a lot of spaces that are willing to say, like, we all recognize this is about white supremacy, right? Like, that is what colorism is rooted in, right? And like, as we think about the myriad ways that white supremacy shows up, I've been saying for years, I've been wanting to write this piece. You probably know what the feeling is. Like, there's a piece in me that I want to write that I've never really written, but like, I think that we have to think about the many different ways that white supremacy shows up, right? And if we're talking about Will and Grace to start, like, one of the ways that white supremacy shows up is looking at this cast and looking at the casting throughout the seasons, right? And looking at the ways that, wow, y'all just, there were only white people in the grocery store. There were only white people at the law firm.
True.
There were only white people, you know what I mean? Or like, there was one Black person. And like, that is the way that white supremacy shows up. But also, if we're thinking about In the Heights, right? Colorism and the fact that all of those cast members were, you know, very fair-skinned and some white passing, that is a machination of white supremacy, right? And the different ways that we need to, one, be able to recognize it so that we can do something to change it. But I mean, it's everywhere. Will and Grace, Friends, every show has
even
some
like in the upcoming Sex and the City. I could even argue with the Gossip Girl reboot. You know, I look at that. It's like, oh, everyone's fair skin. I mean, there's some darker skinned people of color on there, but it's like, even with the way they promote it, they light their face up, or, you know, it's very. Yeah. And I think when we say white supremacy, it's like, it's not necessarily like, oh, racism, right? It's just exactly what it is, white supremacy. Sometimes I say dominant culture, which is just coded language for white supremacy. And it's like, Hollywood loves protecting it, whether they realize it or not. But that's, you know, I could talk with you forever, and I know that we're on the same wavelength and whatever. And I told Travelle at an episode, it's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to invite myself onto your podcast whenever I want.
There's definitely an episode in the future that you will be on, I'm sure. I'm positive of that, you know.
Jared, thank you for, well, I was going to see if I could play this game real quick. You're probably past the flying colors. Let's hope. I think you will, because if you're an expert on Will and Grace, then I'm pretty sure you'll pass. Ooh. So I wrote down a list of guest stars. And I want, or like, and some of them are real, some of them are not. And I want you to tell me if they were a guest star on Will and Grace, or I just made it up and they were never on it. So I'm going to start.
Will and Grace is known for really great guest stars. Yeah. So
you already mentioned one of them, so I have to delete that one. Tracy Ullman, guest star or not?
I wouldn't recognize Tracy Ullman in the police lineup, so I couldn't necessarily tell you. I'm going to say yes, guest star.
Correct. Tracy Ullman.
Oh,
correct.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh, God. My gut is saying to say yes, but I don't see her on a set at Will and Grace. I'm going to say no.
Correct. I don't think she was on. I'm sure listeners will clue us in if we're wrong, but I looked, I did my research. It doesn't seem like she was on there.
They'll be like, she has a 19 episode arc. What do you mean?
Okay, this one, I'm pretty sure you get it right. Madonna.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I actually watched that episode.
She has a great episode of Will and Grace. It's really funny.
That's the one where I remember watching because I was obsessed with Madonna. Where she becomes roommates with Karen, right?
Karen. Like, yeah. It's fantastic. That actually was really good. It's so funny.
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck. I don't think so.
Correct. Yeah,
I'm gonna, because yeah. It's Matt Damon.
Yeah, his homeboy Matt Damon, our friend.
Yes. Yes, Matt Damon is playing a
it was the gay chorus.
A member of the gay chorus, yeah. But he's actually straight.
Maybe I did watch more episodes than I remember. George Takei.
George Takei. I can't remember it specifically, but I do feel like George Takei was in an episode.
That is maybe correct. Maybe I'm making that up. No, you're
okay.
Correct.
All right.
Janet Jackson.
Yes, because yes. Jack becomes one of her background dancers or something like that. Yeah.
I do remember kind of seeing photos of her in it, but yeah, she wasn't.
Yeah, that was a fun episode.
This one is kind of tricky because I do remember this episode, but the next two are actually kind of tricky. Michelle Kwan.
Yes. Wait. Well, you said you remember this episode, which seems like a little bit of a giveaway. Michelle Kwan, was it Michelle Kwan or Christy Yamaguchi? I'm going to say yes. There is an ice skating episode. I'm going to say yes. No, they name her, but she's not in it.
Yes, it's that. That's why it's kind of a trick question. Because I think the episode is where Grace and Jack, they're obsessed with figure skating, right? And then they go see someone. I forgot who it was. And I think that episode, Rudy Galindo shows up. I've done my research, yeah.
Yes, yes, okay.
Okay, RuPaul.
I don't think RuPaul was ever on Will and Grace.
That is correct. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, nice, okay. All right.
Demi Moore.
Oh, yes, absolutely. She plays Jack's former babysitter and she ends up being his adult babysitter.
okay.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I remember that for sure.
James Earl Jones.
Yes. He plays an actor along with Jack and he ends up getting into a fight with Karen or something like that, I think.
Oh, you're good. Okay. Yes, that's correct. Rita Moreno.
I'm too good at this. That's kind of a problem. Rita Moreno. I want to say yes. I'm going to say no.
You're right. You're oh! right. Because I know
I'm
that.
I'm feeling this.
I'm not trying to be they're the same person, but Cheetah Rivera was on. This is kind of a tricky one because they're both these icons and they're in the similar vein. So Wanda Sykes.
I'm going to say no.
Oh yes, she was on. She was.
Was
on.
She yeah, in the reboot?
I think maybe the reboot. I remember because I went to the guest stars' names and she was on it. It might be the reboot.
I was gonna say. Yeah, I feel like she might have been in the reboot, but okay. Yeah. I love Wanda Sykes so much.
Yeah. Cher, that one's easy.
Oh my god, are you kidding me? Cher is one of the biggest guest stars. She's in a dream with that was her second appearance. The first time she slaps Jack because Jack thinks that she's a drag queen and it's not really Cher. And she's like, snap out of it, kid. And oh, it's so good. That's one of the that's one of the best episodes.
Okay, this is funny. Matt Lauer.
Matt Lauer. I'm going to say no because I think it's Al Roker that was in that episode that they kissed that I referenced earlier. I think that's what it was.
I think, from what my research, Matt was in it, but also Al Roker was in it as well. So maybe they were both in the same episode.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So I can see that. I mean, it was an ABC show.
Have a point. Okay. Beyonce.
No.
Yeah, Beyonce wouldn't.
No, Beyonce's never been in one. Yeah.
Jennifer Lopez.
Yes.
Yes.
Karen stole some. Karen had written some song lyrics and Jack ended up stealing them and giving them to Jennifer Lopez.
That's actually a good story. I'm going to be watching this now and I'm sure I'm going to be messaging you saying, okay, what the fuck is up with this episode?
exactly.
Carrie Fisher. Rest in peace.
I don't think so. Debbie Reynolds played Grace's mom throughout the series. Mm-hmm. No, I'm gonna say no.
You're right, but you're right about Debbie Reynolds. Also, Billy Lord was in, I think she's in the reboot. I'm not sure though, but I know Billie Lord was also in it as well. So that was kind of a trick one because it's the whole family tree and Carrie was never in it. There's a couple more. Debbie Harry.
I don't know Debbie Harry.
She's the punk don't icon judge. From Heart of Glass, whatever. She's
so I don't know on that one.
Okay, so this will be a pass. Yeah, she was on there you go. Cameron Diaz.
I don't think Cameron Diaz was on Will and Grace.
You're right. You're right.
Okay,
you're
great. Right. Okay.
And then finally, the late great Luke Perry.
Oh, damn it! You ended on a stumper. Okay, wait. Because I think Luke Perry may have been a gay guy on Will and Grace. Is that right? Hold on.
Okay.
I'm gonna say yes, but I'm not sure.
You're right. He was on. I don't know what character he played.
Yeah, oh my God, I want to say he was a gay guy.
Good. Yeah, good job. I think, if we were wrong on any of this, I'm sure the listeners will tweet at us. So, but whatever.
They will.
Yes. Yeah, that was actually fun. And you did a good job.
Thank you.
You are a tried and true Will and Grace fan. And you know what? I feel
pretty confident after this.
You should just look up Tracy Ullman and Debbie Harry because there are white people we need to know sometimes.
I know Tracy Ullman because of The Simpsons and all of that stuff, but like I didn't really watch the show. But Debbie Harry, I know the name, but I wouldn't recognize her if I saw her.
But good, just good white people to look out for in the future.
Okay. I will add them to my white people the white people I need to look up list. So that's fine.
Cool. Well, Jared, before we go, any plugs? What are you working on?
Sure. Yeah.
And what are you eating for dinner tonight? I don't know.
Yes. Well, that's a really good question. Thanks to our friends from HelloFresh. I co-host Fanti, which is about the things that we love that we have some issues with. And Fanti is a portmanteau of fan and anti, where we talk about social issues, we talk about people, we talk about film and television, we talk about all kinds of different things. We have a really good time with it. The show comes out every Thursday. And we're produced by Maximum Fun, and I would love for everybody to check it out.
Yes, I am an avid listener, y'all. So
thank you.
Of course, and I just love kind of the banter and how you throw shade at Travelle all the time, and y'all.
Well, we gotta keep it interesting. Keep y'all on your toes.
Yes, y'all listen to Fanti. It's on all the podcasting platforms. I'm sure. And check out Jared. Google him. Harass him on Twitter.
That's what I need. Twitter harassment.
Great writer, great reporter. And I'm thank you so much, Jared. I'm so glad you came
Absolutely.
On. You opened my eyes to Will and Grace, and now I'm gonna watch it now. Like after this, I'm gonna start from season one and go through the whole thing.
Or if you need to ease into it, do the guest star episodes. It's a great way to like fall in love with all of it because there's so many good guest stars as you in the game.
Yeah. But thank you so much, Jared, and congratulations on being you.
You know what? Thank you. I'll take that.
Problematic Fave is presented by Diaspora and made possible by the Center for Asian American Media. The podcast is also produced by Dino Ray Ramos and Andrew Merrill, who also edited this episode. Please subscribe to Problematic Fave on Apple Podcasts and give us a nice rating, because we will read them, and they help! Diaspora is an alternative digital film and TV publication and media platform that focuses on people of color, the LGBTQIA+ community, the disabled community, women, and other historically marginalized communities in film, TV, and media. You can visit the site at thediasporatimes.com and follow on Instagram and Twitter at @RealDiaspora. Thanks for listening.